Hi, welcome to my podcast, All Things Wicked. I just want to say, I don't know what happened to me this week, but for some reason, even though I have like how many calendars and I keep up with them, I still get confused on what day it is. Because I guess you could say I don't really have a set schedule like everybody else would, where you know you work like Monday through Friday from like 7 a.m. to like 3 or 5 p.m. maybe. You know, like, I don't have that. My job, they literally send out the schedule like the week before, and then you find out what days you work the next week and whatnot. And I don't have like all the weekends off and stuff like that. It's just all over the place. So I'll still like get confused and whatnot, even though, of course, like I keep track and everything. For some reason, I kept thinking, oh, I have off Thursday, not Friday. I'll work on my podcast more on Thursday. And then I realized today I have off and it's Friday. Yesterday was Thursday and I worked yesterday. So I don't know what I was thinking and I'm sorry about that. I don't know. I don't even know what else to say. I'm also at a hotel right now. So if like you hear anything in the background, like you might hear the cars outside because there's a highway right there. Sorry about that. Maybe you'll hear the air conditioner randomly kick in. I don't know. That's just the life. But anyways, I thought that it would be interesting to look into unsolved cases. There are so many different unsolved cases and they can be pretty interesting. They're also known as cold cases. It is a crime that has not been fully resolved. But if new information does emerge, then it gets looked into again. Today, about 1/3 of American murders go unsolved. Some cases are made into movies or books. They are usually pretty well known. One that I'm sure many of you know is the Zodiac Killer. They believe he killed 6 people, and they took place mainly in Northern California in 1966 to 1969. His first known victim was an 18-year-old student stabbed to death in Riverside. Soon after, a local newspaper got a letter that had details of the crime and stated that the victim was not the first or the last. In 1968, a teenage couple was shot to death near their car. Then 1 year later, another couple was attacked in the same way, but the guy survived. After the attack, the killer had called the police to alert them of what happened. Later that year, he attacked another young couple, but once again, the male survived. The last victim was a taxi driver, who was shot in 1969. There was tons of media coverage done about it because of his letters and phone calls. The letters show great interest in astrological symbolism and could have reflected an influence of occult religious thought. The letters had codes and there were a total of 4 letters. The first one is called Z-408. It was sent in July 1969. It was mailed in 3 parts to 3 different papers. Within a week, a schoolteacher, Donald Hardin, and his wife called with the solution of the letter. In 1969 of November, he sent another letter called Z-340. This one has not been solved yet. It is written differently, but a guy named Cody thinks he may have solved it, but they aren't really sure about that. He started calling himself the Zodiac Killer after he purchased a Zodiac watch. People thought, or probably still think, that Arthur Leigh Allen was the killer. He was a prime suspect in the case, but his DNA didn't match what was on the letters. He died in his 50s in 2014. Gary Stewart came out saying that his dad is a killer. He even wrote a book about it. In 2009, Deborah Perez also said her dad was a killer, but still no one knows for sure. Honestly, a lot of people have come out like, oh, my dad's the killer, my uncle or whoever else. And this guy that made the book about it, like, he's really big. You can see a lot of different articles about it because I guess he also wants to make a movie about it. But the weird thing when I was reading about it is that he didn't really know his dad, actually. His dad, like, left him, basically, at a very young age. So it's just all really confusing me. I didn't read the book. I don't have that book. But, you know, if you read the book and you know anything about it, let me know. Because I'm confused a little bit. But there's a lot about that case. You know, as I said, it's still unsolved. People still trying to figure that out. But there's always so many claims that come forward. So it's a lot. There's a lot of different movies about it. There's one on Hulu I tried to watch the other day. It was really weird, didn't make any sense, and I seriously thought it was like a joke, so I was like, alright, I can't watch this. But if you want to read more about that, you can. Next is the Keddie murders. On the morning of April 12, 1981, Sheila Sharp returned to her home cabin at the Keddie Resorts in California. The 14-year-old girl was at the neighbor's house and came home to something horrible. Inside the cabin was her mother, Glenna Sharp, her teenage brother, John, and his high school friend, Dana Wingate. The three of them were bound by medical and electrical tape and had been stabbed and strangled. Sheila's sister, 12-year-old Tina, was nowhere to be found. Then in the other bedroom, the youngest boys of the family, Ricky and Gray, as well as their neighbor, 12-year-old Justin Smart, were unharmed. They somehow were asleep during the whole thing. Deputy Hank Clement was the first to arrive on the scene. He said it was very gruesome. There was blood everywhere. All the victims had suffered from blunt force trauma and multiple stab wounds. There was an unidentified fingerprint on the rail in the back, but there were no signs of forced entry. Their phone had been left off the hook and all the lights had been shut off and the curtains were closed. Even though the three boys somehow slept through it all. Justin later said that he saw Sue with two men in the house that night. He also said that John and Dana entered the house and argued with the man, which then Tina was taken out the back door by one of the men. There was a lot of evidence found, but at the time there was no DNA testing, so there was very little information. 3 years after the crime, Tina's skull was found about 30 miles from Keddie. There has been a ton of evidence that not everyone knew about or got ignored. The neighbor's wife had left her husband on the day of the murder discovery. After she went to the police station and had a handwritten letter sent to her by her husband, and it said, and I quote, "I've paid the price of your love, and now that I've bought it with four people's lives, you tell me we are through. Great. What else do you want?" The letter was not treated as a confession. A counselor also said how the neighbor's husband, Martin, admitted to killing Sue and Tina. He said, and I quote again, "I killed the woman and her daughter, but I didn't have anything to do with the boys." Quote. But they dismissed it as hearsay. There's a theory that Martin, Sue, and Marilyn were in a love triangle. People also think that the government covered it up. Martin was known as a drug dealer and his friend Bro was also in a drug distribution. It could explain why this case wasn't handled very well, although Martin and Bo are now deceased. There's new DNA evidence that has pointed to other suspects who have been a part of these murders. It is still being looked into. Now, I wanted to try and find some unsolved crimes that aren't very well known or that I didn't even know about. The first couple ones are well known, and I wouldn't want to repeat ones that you may have heard about a lot already. So this next one is about two teenage sisters, and I'm hoping that I'm saying their names right. On the night of December 28, 1956, 15-year-old Barbara Grimes and 13-year-old Patricia Grimes went out to the movies, but they never made it back home. 3 weeks later, their bodies were found dumped by the side of a road. They were completely naked and frozen, and it looked like they had been thrown out of a moving car. Barbara's chest had multiple stab wounds, but were shallow. They were not too serious to cause death. It wasn't really clear what killed them. The case went cold until 2009. A retired Chicago cop decided that it was worth it to look. For two missing people, they were seen a lot after they disappeared. People said that they went on the bus home after the movie, but got off halfway. Two boys saw them minutes later, laughing just blocks from their home. A guard said that on the morning of the 29th, they asked him for directions. That evening, a classmate saw them through a restaurant window walking with two unknown girls. Two employees said that they checked into a nearby hotel on the 30th, but the autopsy report put their deaths within 5 hours of leaving their home for the movie on the 28th. So was the autopsy wrong? Now we get to the phone calls. On January 14th, a week before the bodies were discovered, the house phone of Patricia's classmate Sandra rang sometime around midnight. Sandra's mother answered, then the caller hung up. It rang again a few minutes later, and a small, frightened voice asked for Sandra. But before Sandra could answer, the caller hung up. She could have sworn it was Patricia's voice. Then on the 15th, the cops get a call from someone claiming he had a revelation and a dream that the girls were dead and could be found in Santa Fe Park. 7 days later, two corpses were found less than a mile from that park. People are still trying to understand this case. It's still very confusing. This one is called Who Put Bella in the Witch Elm? As dusk was falling on April 18, 1943, four boys were going through the Hagley Woods. After a while, they spotted a witch elm named for its strange appearance. I looked up photos, but I don't really know how to explain how it looks. The only weird-looking tree that I can think of, other than this one, would have to be the Whomping Willow from Harry Potter. And I guess, like, the top part of the Whomping Willow kind of looks like some of this tree, but it's, again, it's really hard to explain. Just look it up. But they decided to climb it, hoping to find a bird's nest. The one boy saw a glimmer of white. However, it was not a bird's nest, it was a skull. There was clumps of human hair in it. They ran away, promising to never talk about it. But the seriousness of it weighed down on 17-year-old Tom. When he returned home, he told his parents, and they alerted the police. Inside the tree, they found a woman's skeleton. Her bones were scattered around the tree. A short distance away, they found a ring and shoes. Clothing hung from the bones, and there was a piece of fabric inside the mouth of the skull. The examiner said that she was around 35 years old and had been dead for 18 months. The case grew cold, and six months later, mysterious graffiti began to appear in the area. The first message written in chalk on the side of a house nearby said, "Who put Labella down the witch elm?" This is the first time a name had been connected to the women. More messages began to appear. The police couldn't find the artist who did it. They couldn't tell if it was a clue or a taunt. And that's when a lot of theories came about. People thought that she was a victim of a ritual or a spy. Some very interesting theories. To this day, no one really knows what happened. But if you are driving along the A456 Hagley Road between Central Birmingham and Wolferton, you'll pass the border of Hagley Woods. This one is called the Snapchat Murder, so this is more of a recent one. There's not as much information on this one as there is for other ones. On February 13th, 2017, Liberty German, age 14, and 13-year-old friend Abigail Williams managed to photograph and get the voice of their killer, yet it's still unsolved. The girls were on the Delphi Historic Trails taking photos. At some point, they noticed a man nearby. He was wearing a cap and walking with his hands in his pockets. Once he was close enough, he said down the hill. Sometime after that, they were murdered. Police have released little about the investigation. They said they have DNA and are close to solving it. There have been some claims as to who it could be. Because, you know, they do have the photos of him and whatnot, but the thing about having like the photos of him and whatnot is you can't actually see his face because his head is down, and the photos aren't very great quality, so it's just really hard to kind of see. It's just something that they're still trying to solve, and the police didn't release too much about it, so that's all you really know. There are definitely a lot of unsolved crimes out there. It's very shocking and nerve-wracking how many there are. it's something to look into. Interesting to read about, but also sometimes I just don't even know what to think because it's just very confusing. But like I said before, I'll be uploading every single Friday. I have a Twitter. It's called All Things Wicked, and it has the same exact picture and everything. So if you would like to give a follow, you can. Leave any comments or anything that you'd specifically want me to cover. It'd be really cool if you can give me ideas, because sometimes I'm lost and I don't know what to cover. Even though I researched so many different things, I'm still like, stuck. But anyways, thank you so much for listening and joining next time.